On today's show, Bomani Jones joins us to talk about Taylor Swift, Victor Wembanyama, and the greatness of Nikola Jokic. Maybe we'll talk some James Harden. Maybe we'll talk about other people quitting their jobs before the season begins. Plus, the conclusion of our NBA Levels project. All of that and much more on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to season two of The Good Word, y'all. My name is Vincent Goodwill, and this is on the Ball Don't Lie Network. We are also on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, you can see our guest for today. He was my very first guest, so it's only appropriate that Bomani Jones will be the first guest for season two. You can get the right time with Bomani Jones every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on YouTube. Bo, anything else you need to tell the people? Because you've been away for a minute.
Yeah, and we're still on the podcast feed, just so you know. So if you were a listener to the podcast before, if you stay subscribed, you'll get a treat on Monday morning. Monday, October 23rd is the first day back. If you are unfamiliar, come check us out. We're having a good time. Some real nice people came in. They did all this. They came in here. They set stuff up. They put a globe up. They got a stand for Emmy behind me. You know what I'm saying? They got a picture of Stevie Wonder looking at Vince Young. I didn't even have a Stevie Wonder. They decided to do that themselves. You know what I mean? Like, so we all the way back. I guess I've been off for 2-3 months, somewhere in there. So, you know, I holler at y'all.
Yeah, people have been used to hearing you all the time. Like, I know you're going to be touching on Taylor Swift and all that stuff, you know, when you get down.
But Taylor Swift is going to be interesting because I work for Wave Sports and Entertainment, and they do some very, very interesting things with podcasts. For example, they produce the podcast Endeavor. You know what else they produce? This thing called New Heights with Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce. I'm not familiar with this situation. Like, when I worked at ESPN, one thing I did know was there was a real, like, leave your coworkers alone kind of credo, and I kind of needed it because I'd be giving it to them sometime, right? I don't really know how this works, though, in this new situation, right? Like, it's not really an option to play that game in this world. Like, you know, we're going to figure a lot of this stuff out as we go along the way. But I have thoughts. I have thoughts.
I can't wait to hear them because we haven't talked about it. As much as we talk, we haven't talked about it. One thing we have talked about, Bo. Well, we'll say one thing we talked about. I'll just start with this. How excited are you for next Tuesday and next Wednesday for the start of the season? Because for me, usually it's, oh, who's going to the finals? Let's fast forward to June. Or how are we going to get to June? I'm not even thinking about June right now. I'm thinking about everything.
Yo, this is... So, the NBA is trying to find a way to return relevance to its regular season, basically. Because that's just been a tough thing to do. Like, it has become, in large part, something that people will watch on television, but not necessarily something that people are going to seek out. And it really wasn't that long ago that it felt differently. Like, I feel like, to me, I say, and I don't want to blame the Warriors, but the inflection point is 2016,
yep,
where the team goes 73-9. Remember, Kobe Bryant's last game was on ESPN2,
yep,
because we wanted to see if the Warriors were going to win 73, and then they did not win a championship, and then they got Kevin Durant, right? And so I think for a lot of people, the way they view the regular season is something just to pass the time until you get to the postseason. And if we're going to look at it like that, that's fine. We don't really have rivalries in that way that people get charged up with or whatever. We have a social media environment around the NBA that people like to talk about, and you get into trades and stuff people are wearing and all of this stuff, right? But we got some basketball stuff that it's not win or lose type stuff, really. It's just I want to see it. Okay, Zion, the boy hit rock bottom, like, during the offseason. I ain't getting into how much is and is not true. I truly have no idea. I just can't imagine getting no lower than what all that was. I just can't see it. Like, it just seemed highly embarrassing. And that boy came back looking like, look, he ain't want to go outside. All he wanted to do was push-ups. You know, like, all he wanted to do was calisthenics and work on his game. And I think that people forget, when he has played, he has absolutely lived up to the hype that's around him, right? He's coming out here. And I don't know why I had to do somebody out there first. Like, I tried to do a thing to get us a build up to what it is, man. I'm here for Big Vic.
Yep. You don't got to build that up. No, we could just start there. We could just
and we might stay there the whole show.
We could. This could be the Big Vic show. Like, literally, because I will be there Wednesday for Big Vic and his NBA debut against Dallas. I have volunteered, Bo, to go to Oklahoma City to see the Skinny Bowl. And you said there's no rivalries. Big Vic and Chet, that's the rivalry.
Yo, it'll be so interesting because Chet, I guess, is going to kind of be the beta version of Big Vic, and we never even got to see him. Like, I went to Summer League in 2022 specifically to see Chet. I wanted to see it with my own eyes, and then he got hurt. I went specifically in 2023 to see Big Vic, and I felt bad for Chet because I really was. Like, we didn't even get a chance to check you out. Like, there was such a fascination around him going into that draft and coming into his rookie season, and we literally never got to see it. And by the time we do, this dude shows up. I don't know. Like, at Summer League, for his first game, I thought it was very interesting because I'm there and I'm not, like, on the phone and stuff. So I'm just in the arena and I'm talking to people.
Yeah.
I leave and I find out that Twitter had all jokes. And wasn't nobody really laughing inside the building?
No.
Inside the building, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, I see where this is going. Right? And now, just so quick, you get to the preseason, and it just shows you what a difference it is between Summer League, when it's a bunch of dudes you just met 15 minutes ago, and whatever you get out of a semblance of training camp. Because I cannot believe the things that I am seeing with my eyes when this dude plays. I am shocked. I did not expect it to look like this offensively, let alone the fact that he's like something out of a horror movie on defense.
Well, it's like he's Jason. It was like, was it Jason beating up a black dude? Remember the black dude was squaring up to try to fight Jason?
Yeah, he tried to box Jason, and Jason, I mean, he gave Jason all the beats, all the punches, then he went to the body punches, and then somehow got the bright idea to tell Jason, take a hit or take a shot or whatever it was, and Jason uppercutted him and knocked his head off like it was Mortal Kombat, and Mortal Kombat hadn't even come out for like 4 years. But like, every time you think you pass Jason, bow, there go Jason. People be out there, and they take a corner and run in the dark. They think everything okay. Then next thing you know, like, I thought I left Jason back there. Jason, only person with closer speed like Jason, LT. I just don't know how he got back here. I saw that clip of Big Vic where they put him on the back line of that zone, and nobody dared take a shot. It was they all just looked absolutely terrified of the idea that they would have to put a shot up, because this dude might get you from anywhere.
The thing is, you're used to judging length. Like, NBA players are really, really good at judging how long somebody is. Oh, I can get this shot off. If it's a hand in my face, I can get it off. I'm not worried about it. But when I saw Big Vic snatch Andrew Wiggins' shot, when Big Vic was at the free throw line and Wiggins was on the left wing from behind the line and he caught it, Bo, with his left hand, mind you, his left hand, I said, oh no. And you said to me, Bo texted me maybe a week ago, and you said, he's going to be all defense his rookie year. And I was like, nah, it's not going to be rookie year. And I think I texted you like 2 days later, and I was like, yeah, he's going to be all defense.
When you sent me that text back, I was like, did you forget I told you that? I was not exactly sure which direction this was going in. Because, no, I mean, I think there's something to be said for the fact that, and we see this happen with rookies, they get to the NBA, and there are people there who are capable of doing things that they've never seen before, right? Like, it's shots that they used to be able to get. No, that one's out of your repertoire now, right? In football, you see it very clearly with quarterbacks. Like, yo, that used to be what open meant. That's right, not what open means anymore, right? Like, no, you got to do this a little bit differently. What is fascinating about this, and this is kind of like in football, it's like when Michael Vick got there. I guess with basketball, Shaq would be a great example. LeBron, not even so much out the door, but what happens when there's one dude that is unlike anything anybody in the NBA has seen before, right? Like, this is what open used to mean in the NBA. It no longer means that anymore. What do you do?
Well, you know what you do? You swing the ball around the other side of the floor. That's what you do. But the problem is, he gonna get there in about half a step. He looks bigger than the floor. Like, is that what it looks like? He looks bigger than the floor.
Dog, these cats are gonna be shooting shots up so fast. Like, that's what it's going to come down to, is the level of quickness. Like, I just do that a lot, right? Where I just, like, start a sentence and then you stop it because it feels like it's going to be some measure of hyperbole. And then you realize, no, I really don't think that's what it is. Like, it was one thing that game against the Heat where you just saw everybody scared to shoot, but it was like nobody you really thought about. Right. Then you saw them clips against the Warriors and you saw dudes with names that you recognize, right? Like cats with rings, cats with stripes. Andrew Wiggins is 6'7". Like, he's not, it's not like he's just picking on little dudes.
Dude, did you see the one that he got Clay? He blocked Clay. And then here's the thing. He's going to Bill Russell this, where his block shots on the perimeter are going to start his personal fast break, because he's going to get going in about two steps. Oh, you're going to try to catch me. He's going to slow up, let you pass by, laugh at you, then barely get off the floor because he don't have to jump to dunk.
Yeah, and now we get to the other part. And this is the part, I think, at least for me thus far, that has been shocking, is that I did not think offensively he would look as good as he has. I did not think fluid. That his jump shot would look as functional mm-hmm. as it's been, right? Because he's not big enough to just, like, bowl his way to the cup if it ain't going for him, right? Like, he's going to have to figure out some other stuff. However, as Thomas Bryant learned, he can doll seam it and just reach up to the rim from a place you never thought a person could dunk from. What are you talking about? Like, the dude standing outside the restricted area. And it wasn't like he barely dunked it when
he got
that.
It clean. He got it clean. He got it like, clean.
When have you ever seen NBA players in the game where you just visibly see it on them? Like, dude, what just happened here?
And what you're going to have is, this is why I wish Ja Morant was playing, because I want to see the super athletic dude try him. Like, I want to see the Derrick Rose archetype, the Russell Westbrook archetype, the dude that says, oh, like, treat them like, remember when Russ dunked on Rudy Gobert?
Yes.
And he made a big deal out of, you know what I mean? And that's Russ, and that ain't even Russ at his height. I want to see that guy. Maybe it's Ant-Man. Maybe it's the Ant-Man that's going to say, yeah, I see 7'4 every day at practice. I dunk on that clown every day in practice. I'm going to get him enough. and get yeah. your feelings hurt.
Yeah, A, strong enough, but my question is this. How high do you have to get up to really do this? Like, what has been so shocking is still photos that just let you know this, how high you got to shoot this. Did you see this clip of the Mavericks practicing? And yeah, for those of you who are wondering, hey, what's God Sham got up to? He is an assistant coach. And he's an assistant coach with the Mavericks. And they got that dude with, like, we number one foam finger pads on, and just sticking his arm straight up in the air, because that's the closest they could come to replicating what this is. I can't, I mean, this is going to be fascinating to watch, because I did not, you and I were both old enough when LeBron came into the league.
Yes.
That we had a decent enough grasp on what basketball was, that I think that we can put that in the proper context of what this is. I can't speak for you, but, and granted, LeBron was 18, not 19. But this 19-year-old version of Vic looks to be better than that rookie version of LeBron. And LeBron hit the league ready to be a very good NBA player.
Well, even the thing with LeBron was early was the consistency of, like, doing it night to night, replicating it. With Vic, I don't feel like that's going to be much of a problem. Like, the numbers might fluctuate because of jump shooting. But I feel like defensively, he's going to be there night after night, easy. And whether he's playing 30 minutes or 35 minutes, however Pop and those guys manage him. And I don't think that everything that I've heard from people who I trust, they're not going to put him on, like, the low management plan early. They're right. not going to be trying to, you know, save him from himself type of thing. They ain't going to throw him out there to kill himself, but they ain't going to save him just to save him. Man, defensively, this is a different sort of thing. I can't remember a big this adept, and I would say, and you tell me if I'm wrong, maybe David Robinson year one came was the most recent, because Olajuwon was years before, and I can't think of a big that was that athletic and that defensively inclined from the moment he got into the league.
Yeah, I think that's fair, though. We're going to get into our wonderfully ambiguous space with a player like him. Is he a big or is he a tall? And the question is he so much of a tall that he just becomes a big by default? I mean, the passing guy of the double team is actually very biggish, right? Yes. Like, he's... I ain't seen this. I was talking to somebody in Vegas in July, and I think a lot of us, we're all looking at it, and we see, like, all the reasons why we think that obviously this could not work, or if you're more inclined to go further, how this would not work. And I think we've all tried to devil's advocate this thing. And this guy was telling me he was talking to a scout, and he had all his yeah buts, and the scout was like, hey, man, don't do this. Nothing you're going to say is going to hold up. The dude has handles. That's the sick part. Like, when I got there in Vegas and I see this 7'3" dude handling the ball, I don't understand how any of this is possible. Like, with LeBron, it's like, wow, what an amazing collection of things in one place. It's impossible they'd all be there, but it wasn't impossible that you could be 6'8 and fast. It wasn't impossible you could be 6'8 and have all, like, all of those things were individually possible in combination. You just rarely saw them in the same place. There are things with this dude that seem individually impossible. Like, it's impossible to be 7'3", 7'4", and handle the ball like that. It's impossible to be that long. It's impossible to be that tall and that coordinated, like, because those things are typically kind of zero sum. I don't understand, Vinny. What is going on?
And here's the other thing. Because we watched Big Vic's first game, and he walked by us in, like, the little tunnel area. He looks every bit of 7'4". Like, this ain't one of them fake 7'4s where you stand on your tippy toes and it's cute and all this other type of stuff. Usually dudes who are that tall, usually are that tall. Like, tall dudes are looking up at him. He makes regular tall dudes. Like, Bo, you are every bit of 6'4".
He's a legitimate foot taller than me. I'm out there feeling like I'm in that picture of Muzzy Bowles and Manute Bowles.
With three basketballs in his place and his arms. Look, can you imagine the first time he pats Chris Paul on the head and tells him nice try?
Why was I just having that exact same thought? Like, he's going to do it by accident, right? It's not even going to be on purpose. Like, oh, my bad, I didn't even know you was there, right? And then this is going to turn into a thing. I'm like, what's going to be that first sequence where something happens and he's in the lane and he blocks like four shots in a row? Right, where this keeps going up and it keeps coming back.
I want him to spend 3 days with Mutombo just to learn something. Just to give me something with the finger wag. Give me something that you can do that goes right outside of being a Spur, but just shows me that you just... Because he going to look at dudes funny, too. He ain't the dude that's just going to sit there stoic. He ain't Tim Duncan. He going to have some fire in your face, and that's going to be funny.
He is already, Akeem Olajuwon is drafting an email in all caps right now to get him down there to work on some moves and tell him some things, you know, like it's already, I saw what Gil had to say about that with Olajuwon. And I will say this, LeBron looked a lot better after he went and worked with Olajuwon, and Kobe looked a lot better after he went and worked with Olajuwon. If this dude goes out there and works with Olajuwon, I mean, I also agree that Olajuwon getting over on a lot of these dudes, right? Like this is all you have to do. Oh, Akeem, really? That's it, huh? That's all
play soccer when you're young and get light on your feet.
Yeah, exactly. You go make up for all that I didn't learn in this week at your house. Got it, Dream. All right, whatever, man. If this dude go down there and mess with Dream and come back with some of that stuff, this is just going to be like, what are you supposed... What if he learns a hook shot?
Ooh. And wait, the hook shot's going to come down, right?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It'll look like you throw your socks in a hamper. The dirty dunk.
This is going to be... Like, he is a rookie. He is a rookie. I'm not talking about the step back three and the tip dunk or none of that. Like, we ain't even going there. We're just saying basic offensive plays that dudes his size are not supposed to do. Bo, we can sit here and talk about the greatness of Vic all day.
We got to talk about other stuff.
We got other shit to talk about, right? So, what do you want to go? Let's put it like this. Who quits their job before the season actually starts? Am I talking about James Harden or am I talking about Terry Stotts?
That's a great question. I was so sure that you were talking about Terry Stotts, but I was like, wow, that's really early in the season preview. And I was like, oh, yes, there is James Harden, who he's so torn because he really doesn't like. He and Daryl Morey both know each other's movies, and he knows he can't act bad enough to make Morey blink. Mm-hmm. But he also knows that behaving is not going to do anything to help him achieve his ultimate goals. I have no idea what in the world is going to happen with that, but they've given him these personal days. And look, the Clippers ain't, apparently Terrence Mann is a well-liked figure in that organization. They ain't coming off it.
Do you know how old Terrence Mann is?
What is he, about 25?
I think he's 27.
Really? So and they like, still won't come off him.
Ain't like we talking about a kid here. You know what I mean? Ain't like we talking about
a kid. This is Shai Gilgeous Alexander.
No, this ain't that. This is a guy, I think, who's averaged maybe 9.7 points for his career. I could be wrong on that. And I do think he's better than his numbers.
Yes.
But clearly, clearly, right? The Clippers are saying, we'll take him. They ain't saying, we'll come get him, and we ain't gonna come get him from you, Daryl Morey. I wonder how much that is playing into all this, too.
Dude, this is the problem that the Sixers have in this, at least as far as I can tell. You tell me if I'm wrong here.
Okay.
But if I just pulled out a stat sheet and told you that this person put the team on his back in two games in the conference semifinals and won them, right? If I told you that that guy was available for trade for the low, low price of a first-round pick, a pick swap, and Terrence Mann, I think there may be one other piece in there, but that doesn't sound unreasonable at all, right? That sounds like the kind of package that gets you, say, a Jrue Holiday in some circumstances, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, this is the problem. And I want to be very careful and delicate about how I say this because I recognize that what I'm about to say could be very, very offensive. But there's no other way to look at it. The jury's still out on whether or not James Harden is a loser.
Ooh.
Right. I mean, the question is, can you win with him on your team in those moments? So it's not simply, wow, what if we got James Harden and he was our third best player? Is no matter what capacity James Harden serves in, is he going to come apart when this matters and doom your team? Because guess what? I have seen a team in the NBA Finals with James Harden as his third best player and he fell apart. And that was 11 years ago. How many times in the intervening time period have we seen him fall apart? And unlike most postseasons in sports, the basketball postseason is not a small sample because you play so many games and he's played mm-hmm. so many games over mm-hmm. so many years. So if you're the Clippers, are you giving all this up for a dude where it is entirely possible that you literally cannot win with him? Hell no, you're not doing that. And if I'm talking like this and I'm just at the crib, can you imagine what, like, if you are a Clipper, like somebody mm-hmm. in the league, how you feel about that? But the counterpoint is, these are different Clippers now, but this is an organization that blew a 3-1 lead to James Harden.
They blew a 3-1 lead to James Harden. We were talking about that earlier today. That's the one or one of the couple that you don't put on Doc Rivers, right? That's the one 3-1 lead that you don't put on Doc Rivers. And it wasn't even James Harden that brought that Rockets team back.
That's right.
It was Josh Smith.
Yes, that game six was Josh Smith and the boys.
That was Josh. Look, Harden was on the bench. They had threw the towel in, essentially. They said, look, we ain't got no more for you. And next thing you know, corner three, wing three. That 15-point lead is down to six. We got a chance here, boys. Why? Because it's Doc Rivers and Chris Paul on the other side.
That leads to the Clippers being like, yo, we know what it's like to have the guy that gets you there and the guy that maybe holds you back.
Well, here's my calculus. And I'm going to say you're wrong, but here's the calculus. If he's your third best player, Kawhi and PG are going to take up so much playoff oxygen. he can't hurt you as much because you're not going to count on him to dribble, right? And if you don't have PG or Kawhi in the playoffs, you're screwed anyway, no matter who you got.
Yeah, but if he's going to play for that team, he's going to be their primary playmaker. And he's going to also have to hit open shots for this to work. And it's not that he simply doesn't play as well as he plays in the regular season, right? Like, that's what I would say about Joel Embiid. He simply doesn't play as well as he plays in the regular season. James Harden falls apart.
Yeah.
You know, like them 10 turnover games. Like, you can't stop him from being the guy that bring the ball across half court unless they make – I mean, their whole thing is that not having a point guard. And they got – I mean, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook on the same team. Like, Ty Lue, he going to have to take a break because, you know, he good to take a break. He going to need to take a break.
You said he's going to bring the ball up the floor. And I was going to ask you, what is Russell Westbrook doing while James Harden is bringing the ball up the floor?
I mean, wait a minute. He's not going to come off the – Russell Westbrook ain't coming off the bench?
Oh, no. Russell Westbrook is the starting point guard come hell or high water.
Oh, I thought that – I guess after the playoffs, you kind of can't do that, can you?
That's what I'm saying. You ain't bringing – now Russ is on a minimum deal. Now, you're not going to have Russ on a minimum deal and have him come off the bench – in his hometown after he played the way that he played and helped y'all from capsizing while PG and Kawhi was on the chilling list.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is this, because the Sixers ultimately stopped playing James Harden basketball, right?
Yes.
And that's important because Russell Westbrook left Houston in part because he didn't want to play James Harden basketball. Like, in such a way where they still cool, but he was like, hey, homie, I got to go. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really approve of the way you get down. So James Harden's influence, I'm assuming, is just going to be greatly mitigated under these circumstances that we described. But nobody really, other than Russ, I guess, like, who's like the driving, domineering personality that you got there? Because it's not Kawhi Leonard. He just want to play basketball and go home. Paul George doesn't strike me as that sort of dude. Like, I feel like adding James Harden to what they're doing just is a lot. And if James Harden back at the crib, it's a lot.
That's the other part. Well, I think this is more player-driven than organizational-driven. I think this is more Paul George, Kawhi Leonard saying, we can bring him in. Because players always think that they can bring him in. I think the more intriguing part of all of this, Bo, is the subtext for Daryl Morey, for Nick Nurse, for everybody in Philadelphia, regardless of the return that you get, whatever that return is. Somebody going to tell me what the day of the Joel Embiid trade request? Can we mark that down?
I've been trying to mark this down for like 2 years because the problem with it now is I would not trade for Joel Embiid anymore.
Loser. I see Karl Malone when I see Embiid.
Yeah, see, I don't.
Not directly, but that's a guy that you can't put the ball in his hands in the playoffs when it's late. Yeah. Like he's not that guy. But if you put him next to a dude who can have the ball in his hands in the playoffs, he will be fine.
Yeah, I think my thing with Embiid, and the reason I say this is, I think the physical decline will begin, right? Yeah. Like, this is a dude that's had all these injuries, everything else at this age, carries around a lot of weight. I just don't know how long he's going to be the player that we've seen, like how long he'll be an MVP caliber player. That being said, he'll be a defensive force for a long time.
Once you take the usage off of him, once you take 33 points a game, 30 points a game, whatever it is, 22 shots. Once you take that off of him and you tell him, Joel, we just need you to be the most imposing force in the paint, I think he becomes a better player. Or he becomes more useful. You know what I mean? He becomes more useful because he doesn't have the burden of trying to do all these other things. And because he's won his MVP, he ain't chasing that imaginary ghost in Denver that he was never close to begin with, right?
Dude. Mike Malone's so bad at us now. We've been in here talking for, let me look at the clock, like 30 minutes, and we just got around to talk about the world champion, Denver Nuggets, and the best player in the world. Like, I don't have qualifiers to offer about this anymore. That's the best player in the world. Giannis just lost in the first round, baby. This is the best player in the world right now.
No, and you know what's funny, Bo? I went back and listened to our very first podcast because producer John told me to do it. Because the topics that we talked about, you ready for this list?
Let's go.
Ja Morant and breathing, because, you know, he needed to go do some breathing. Denver, can Nikola Jokic do it on the production that he was doing it? You literally said he can't be taking 14, 15 shots a game. He's got to be a 21, 22 shot a night person. In the playoffs, 22 shots. Right?
Oh, wow.
Point for you. Right, right. Point for you. Right? We talked about the Miami Heat being dragged to the playoffs by Jimmy freaking Butler. And what did he do? Drag them to the finals. Another point for us. And we also talked about, are the Boston Celtics chokalicious?
It came up.
It came up. So
I have no idea what to make of them this year either.
They're more talented, right?
They're more talented. The not having Marcus Smart thing, one would think, matters.
Yes.
What exactly Kristaps Porzingis is, as he went to one of them teams, don't none of us watch. Kristaps Porzingis might average a triple-double with the Bullets. I have no idea. Did I say the Bullets?
You just said the Bullets. I'm about to get to you. You just said the Bullets. Do they still play in Landover, Maryland? Do they still have that old logo?
Buddy, they could play on 125th and Lennox, and I still wouldn't have never seen them.
The Celtics are intriguing me because I feel like after the Jrue Holiday move, everybody vaulted them above Milwaukee. And I'm like, I'm like, we saw Jaylen Brown come apart when Jason Tatum got hurt in that game 7. Like, you can say what you want about that game 7. When you go down 3-0 to a team that you're supposed to be better than, you've got some chemical issues going on there.
Yeah, and I think Jrue Holiday is past the age where you can assume that the last time you saw him, he'll be as good the next time you see him. You know, I just don't think we're there. Like, we're going to have to see there. Is he going to be able to help Jason Tatum get easier shots? Because that's the next level of growth for Jason Tatum, is stop trying to make this so difficult, right? Like, we get it. You got it. Mamba mentality. Way to go, buddy. All right, now let's try to get some easier shots. It'll make things a lot easier for you in every way and capacity. I don't know how you're supposed to guard Damian Lillard and Giannis on the team at the same time. That's all I'm saying. I don't know who Damian Lillard's going to guard when it matters. Because but I have no idea how you are supposed to deal with the spacing that having Lillard creates for that team. I mean, and I guess we're going to see what Adrian Griffin has since Terry Stotts stomped his feet and quit his job. That was so wild. Just like, wow. Wow. I need to know more.
Well, I think what it comes down to from people I've talked to is that dude was used to being in charge.
Yep.
And could not take no longer being in charge and the element of this new coach who probably doesn't know all that he's going to know 6 months from now, who's still going to be figuring things out. Now I got to work behind or alongside him. And add to the fact, those type of situations, those associate head coaches that come in, they're not brought in by the head coach. They're brought in by the front office. So it is a weird power dynamic from start to finish.
But didn't he know that's what the job was? That's my only thing, right? Like, I get that often when you got somebody like him, what you do is you give him something to be in charge of. And then that first stops was the offense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you get to be the head coach of the offense rather than assistant or associate coach for offense, right? You the head coach of the offense. That's your world. We'll deal with what you bring in, da-da-da. Okay. But this isn't football. You don't get your own set of guys.
No.
Right? Like, that's not in. And what you have to understand in that position, and this is where it's kind of good that Stotts left rather than forcing Adrian Griffin to fire him. All the coaches have to be aligned and at all times sell the idea that man is in charge. Because if you don't sell the idea that he's in charge, the players will never believe. Everybody that's under his employ needs to do that. Like, if we were like 20 years ago, you and people use more formal titles, we all call him Coach Griffin. You know what I mean? Like, we need to just to establish to everybody here this is the man that's in charge. You can't be out here going rogue. And I was stunned that Stotts would really play. And look, it ain't like, we're not talking about Mike D'Antoni. Like, I'd understand why Mike D'Antoni would be like, hey, Mike D'Antoni's probably going to make the Hall of Fame. I have my criticisms of him, but he would have reasons to have this giant, have a giant ego in that way. Right. Who the hell is Terry Stotts?
A dude who coached the Portland Trail Blazers. A very nice man.
I was at Terry Stotts' first game as a head coach because somebody in Atlanta, because I think they fired Lon Kruger to give him that job.
That sounds about right.
I was at CNN Center with a friend, and somebody gave us tickets. They were just like, hey, you want tickets? Here, tickets. They weren't even bad. Total stranger. That's what the Hawks is hitting on in the year 1999 or whatever year that was. Whatever that was, he just handed us tickets. Right. I saw Terry Stotts do that. I had never heard of Terry Stotts a day in my life in that moment. And it never became more descript for me than him. And he the one out here like, yeah, I'll come to the huddle when I feel like it.
Yeah, I'm talking to, and not only are you talking to like quote unquote players, you've pulled the two biggest players to the side when the coaches told you, hey, coaches, we about to huddle up. Nah, chief, that ain't what's working here. You're not pulling Giannis and Dame off to the side to have your own little powwow with them while the coach is trying to get the coaches on one accord. Nah.
Right.
Hey, I'm with you. Now, I do have something, because we've been talking about this for a long time, and I wonder if this is finally the year. Is this finally the year where the youth overtake these old dudes?
That is a great question, because I had a similar question for you that's tangentially related, which is like 50 over under games played for LeBron James.
I would say slightly over, but I would not be surprised if he played 45 games.
Yeah, I'm betting under just because we asked him too much, right? Like, it's just a lot, especially given what it looked like the last time we saw him. Like, we're asking for a great deal, but that gets tied into this. Kevin Durant is what now?
35. I saw him and asked him about turning 35 because I said, you know, you kind of slid under the radar when we talk about age because we only talk about LeBron being old. But brother, you old too. Yeah. And you see the small slippage with KD.
Yeah.
Because it's not like a physical thing with LeBron, like jumping as high and as fast and all that stuff. You see it a little bit with KD. I still think KD is the best player on the Phoenix Suns. But I understand if people say it's Devin Booker.
Yeah. Like, look, Steph Curry's 35. Like, yes. It's not supposed to be like this. Like, Jokic winning a championship when he did at the age he did, he and Embiid going for MVP, that's really what it's supposed to be, is guys in that territory who are there. And these old dudes been Voltrotted it up the last few years, you know what I'm saying? So they keep making this happen. But even now, when you think about it, a guy like Kawhi Leonard's 32 years old. I want to say Paul George is 33 years old. Mm-hmm.
These
dudes are down, are like kind of on the downside. Like, I think we're going to see an explosion from Anthony Edwards, but the team isn't going to be good enough. What's going to be interesting is if Zion comes out here looking for real, the Pelicans were like top two in the West last year early. When he was getting that done, like, we got to keep an eye on what's going on in that situation. But the Nuggets, who are a relatively young team across the board, when you think about it, I still think they had a team to beat. I think that's the part that's lost in this, is the champs are still here. The best player is still the best player.
And usually when you think of previews, you think of, oh, is best player still in his prime? Is the champion still a reasonable version of itself? Then you check off and you say, oh, y'all gonna win multiple titles. That's usually what that equates to in modern NBA. And my, you know, whatever predictions that I hate doing, I got Denver going to the finals and I got them playing Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Now, that may be chalk. And maybe Phoenix has something to say if they shake up their roster or whatever and wind up getting another big. Okay, but maybe not. But who's going to guard that dude?
Yeah, I don't see it for Phoenix, and I don't see it for Phoenix. So I got in trouble with people in Phoenix a couple of years ago, because this is before Devin Booker broke out. So everybody would get offended every time he didn't make it on the All-Star team.
Yeah.
And I was just like, look, is this a dude who legitimately affects winning? Is he a good time? Is he getting buckets, or does he legitimately affect winning? After that point, he became a dude who was affecting winning. Prior to that, it had not been demonstrated at all, right? But like, he is a guy who does that now. There is nothing to indicate up until this point that Brad Beal is a dude that affects winning.
Now, I tend to agree with you on that to a point, but I also think you lose sight of how good a player like Brad is if he's overmatched. If he's in a situation that's above his head, like the Washington Wizards, who ain't never won 50 games since Michael Jackson released Off the Damn Wall in 1979. Yep. Nobody was going to succeed there. And the comp that I made to Brad Beal that he actually agreed with, I said to him, never has a good player, a great player, waited this long in his career and then in one transaction played with the two best players he will ever have played with.
Yeah.
And the comp that I had was Ray Allen in 2008 with Boston. He went from playing in Milwaukee with Glenn Robinson, Sam Cassell, to Seattle with Rashard Lewis, and then he played with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. Now, you can make maybe Glenn Robinson and Paul Pierce are reasonable facsimiles.
Yeah.
But yeah, those were the two best players that Ray Allen was going to play with, and he became the third option, and they won a title.
Yes. Do you think Brad Beal's as good a player as Ray Allen was? Because I don't.
By 2008, I think they are similar. Ray Allen's a better shooter, of course. So that makes being the third option a lot easier. The third option better be the best shooter out of the group. But I think they're comparable players. I think we lose sight of how good Brad Beal actually is because he played on a team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the one thing, though, to point out, and this will be interesting to see how this changes now that he doesn't have to take all the shots or is not the person taking all the shots, which is Brad Beal used to be a 40% from three shooter. He is not that anymore. He has not been that recently. He also hadn't played a lot of games in these years, which is always hard to tell what that means, though, with sorry teams, because they could always just be like, hey, take a week off. We trying to, fall in the standards. I never know quite what to make of it. But if he gets back to being like a 38, 39% three-point shooter, and he's out there with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, you're like, yeah, now we talk about something. Now, who is this team going to guard? You got anything for me on that?
Nobody. Nobody. You got maybe Josh Okogie and no. Got nothing for you. And maybe they're saying they're going to scheme it up because you got Frank Vogel. Maybe that's your thing,
yeah,
with Frank. Because Frank ran two totally different defenses in Indiana, which was Paul George and then Roy Hibbert at the rim, to the Lakers with Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, and all those dudes. So maybe he schemes it up to cover it up. On Beal and three-point shooting, if Beal's on the weak side of the floor and you got KD and Book on the other side, not saying you're going to leave Bradley Beal open, but you got to leave somebody open, and it ain't Kevin Durant.
Yeah, if they're healthy, they're going to be hard to stop. Like, I don't think there's any question about that part. They're going to be hard to stop, but the question's going to come down to them. And this, again, Mike Malone going to be mad at us. Hey, man.
Mike Malone always mad.
Yeah, but what y'all got for the big man? Like, nope. It's so interesting that we're normally at this point, everybody in the conference looks up and sees what happened. They're like, yo, we got to do something about that. Like a great example, 2009, the Cavs go get Shaq. They're like, yo, somebody got to do something with Dwight Howard, right?
Right,
like
you
you make that change because, that's the mountain that you got to climb and that's what you got to fix. I don't know what you're supposed to do on what we going to do about Jokic. Like what?
You know what a scout told me yesterday? Not scout, a GM told me yesterday. He says, well, Yusuf Nurkic is so slow, he ain't going to bite on the first pump fake because he ain't going to see it. By the time Jokic come back around on the second move, Nurkic is going to be right there waiting.
Jokic will put 80 a night on Nurkic. 80. Don't they got a little something from when they was in Denver?
Exactly. Apparently Nurkic plays him well.
I guess Jokic took his quarter, though.
Yeah.
Jokic ran that man out of town.
Ran that man out of town. And we're almost out of time with Bo, but Bo said he's going to do these quick five questions that he doesn't know in advance, and I'm going to do this with some of my guests who I'm really, really good with, and it gets you a chance to let them know, to get to know them a little bit more. Bo's a music guy. So, Bo, if there is one instrument that you could be world-class good at playing, what would it be?
Oh, I went the guitar. I own like three guitars. I've been meaning to learn to play now for the last 15 years. They just be sitting there. And the problem is, I be so whack when I start. That's not what I want to be. I don't, the effort that it would take to be that guitar person, I am never going to put in that work. But if you find a way for me to just get there, like they make a player guitar, like they used to make player pianos, I'd be out here fronting.
No, bass guitar for me. I would love to be able to play the bass. Just let me play the bottom. Just let me chill, add something to it. I would do that. Favorite song on Brown Sugar, not named Higher.
Oh, I can't take Higher. if I eliminate my answer, knowing that was my answer. Me and Those Dreaming Eyes of Mine is, look, oh my goodness, there she go. Switching that ass. I relate, dog. I ain't never related more to like that's one of those right there that like as a dude, you hear a dude say the song and you be like, they gonna love that night even hating. Like this isn't pandering. This is just what it is.
Yes. Mine is the one with the three cuss words. Go look it up.
You're like a little murder in your love. I see.
Didn't say murder, just said assault.
I thought it was murder.
He said handcuffs. He said handcuffs.
Yeah.
That's all.
I hear you.
Handcuffs. All right. Prince the guitarist or Prince on keys?
Ooh. I am going to say Prince the guitarist just because he doesn't show off on keys nearly as much. Like, I got the examples of Prince showing off on guitar just like, oh my God. He doesn't give you that for like 15 minutes on the keyboard, though he absolutely could.
Yes. Album, now this is gonna stump you. Maybe it stumps you. Album that best describes Atlanta.
Oh, it depends on which Atlanta you're talking about, but if you want to talk about
your Atlanta.
I'll say this. I don't know if any Atlanta has quite been captured like Southern Playlist of Cadillac Music gets 1994 Atlanta. Like that gets 1994 Southwest Atlanta, it nails it. Absolutely nails it. I'll be honest, these boys, this stuff they put down now, they talk about Atlanta. I'm too old to go to.
Last one. This is a sports question. Your favorite rivalry?
Oh, Carolina Duke in basketball is, because once I lived in that, I was like, oh, it gets no better than this. Because it really is dead serious without ever being, like, dangerous. It's not, like it's purportedly classy people, but they're not really that classy. And historically, they've always just been so good going against each other. But it is nonstop. Like, it is amazing how much energy is expended in both directions in just hating somebody that lives 10 minutes away. They right down there. And the beef is real, and it should be real.
Yeah. I've never been to a Duke Carolina game, but you spend some time around the Carolina dudes and they are hilarious. You spend time around the Duke dudes, they are Duke dudes.
Yep.
That's what it is.
The same people.
They are not the same people. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Bomani Jones, The Right Time with Bomani Jones every Monday, Wednesday, Friday on YouTube at noon Eastern time. If you're listening to us and you haven't heard him yet, go on over there and listen to him or watch him and hit that subscribe button. Bo, appreciate you, dog.
Appreciate you, man.
Now, I know you guys have all been waiting to see who made level one of our NBA levels project. Six guys left, and we're calling them bus drivers. They were voted in by our Yahoo NBA staff. And with me to talk about it, the great Dan Devine. Let's go to that now.
Welcome back for another installment, our final installment, for our NBA levels project. How we did it, 40 names, four tiers. We created the names, we voted on the names, the entire Yahoo Sports NBA staff. I was a voter. My compadre here, Dan Devine, he was also a voter. Level one, the bus driver, best player on a championship team. Let's run down the names. I'm sure if you guys have already been listening, you could figure out who these guys are.
Process of elimination. We get to the top of the mountain. Who's up there, right?
You figure it out, right? Nikola Jokic, Stephen Curry, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jason Tatum, Luka Doncic, and Kevin Durant. There's an interesting one there for me. I'm curious if it's the same interesting one for you, Dan Devine.
Well, yeah. So the premise of this list was it's about this season, right?
This and season,
so
we're yes.
We're talking about it's not, you know, has this person done it in the past? Has this person, you know, could you imagine them doing it in the future? It's this season. And so I think that's where the disconnect on some of these names went. I think the most interesting name in this list in that context is Luka Doncic. And because, I mean, independent of that, like if we're just talking about individual player, individual skill, you know, the ability and where you sort of see that the ascent of that career going, I don't think there's any doubt that he is on that level. And I think if I remember right, I think I had him in that conversation too for a level one player. But this season's Dallas Mavericks, I don't know that anybody would reasonably consider them to be, or maybe anybody outside of Dallas would reasonably consider them to be a full-fledged championship contender. Some of that is just the strength of the West, you know, with Denver at the top, with Phoenix right there, and then a sort of cluster of teams with the Lakers and the Warriors, potentially a fully healthy Clippers and so on and so forth in that mix. The Grizzlies, when they get Ja Morant back, there's so many great teams in the West. And some of it is, the last time we saw Luka Doncic outside of getting ejected in the FIBA World Cup for tangling with Dylan Brooks, we saw a team that didn't coalesce after the Kyrie Irving trade that, you know, was well under 500 when those two guys shared the floor, was lights out offensively, but had a ton of questions to answer defensively. They're trying to answer some of those questions with rookies this season. Derek Lively, Omax Prosper, guys that Jason Kidd seems to have some interest in trying to get them more heavy opportunities in the rotation. But there's just so many more questions to answer that I think that prevent me from putting Dallas into that mix. So I think if you were going to, I'd like circle one name in this group and say, maybe level two, I think he'd be the one to do it.
Yeah, you have to squint just right. A little bit for Luka, and not as an indictment on his talent, but maybe just an indictment on where his game is right now at this moment. And I don't think anybody has any doubt that he can get there. I think there's questions about what Luka does when he does not have the ball. I think there's questions about Luka defensively. Like, Luka could be a much better team offensive player. And I don't mean like assists, because he's going to be high usage. He's going to command the ball a lot. But can you be a threat when you don't have the ball in your hands? I hate to turn back the clock. The triangle offense would be really good for someone like him, because it requires you to keep moving more than you have the ball, and it requires eyes to be on you so that, hey, if Luka's on the weak side, you better have eyes on him like he's on the strong side of the floor, and it compromises your defense and it allows lesser offensive players to cook. But as far as his game is pretty much unindictable, if that's even a word, right? You don't look at his game, you don't look at his efficiency. Of course, there's the conditioning, which I think is always going to be a question with him. But so, yeah, for me, he's the diciest pick, right? He's the diciest pick. I think for other people on here, the diciest pick was probably Kevin Durant. He wasn't a dicey pick for me. And I'm sure he was a dicey pick because of health, because he hasn't gotten his team out of the second round since he was with the Golden State Warriors. 2019 was a long time ago. And we can talk all we want about, you know, if the foot wasn't on the line and everything else, it's like a game of Clue. Kevin Durant in the kitchen with the hook, you know, that sort of thing. But to me, he was a clear-cut number one, because I can easily see him on any team that he's played for being in the conference finals, being within the doorstep of the NBA finals. I think his game is still efficient. I think his injuries, even if the recoveries might be longer than maybe what you want them to be, his injuries are not devastating. Achilles aside, he recovered from the Lisfranc injury in 2015. Nobody thinks about that. We don't even think about the Achilles as much anymore. He came back from the MCL. The ankle injury was a freak thing. He slipped on a spot on the floor. I don't think that thing will happen again. And he's so much of an impactful defensive player, Dan. I don't have a problem with putting him here, but I understand if people are putting him a level below Giannis and Tatum and Jokic and Steph. But I put him right there in that class, and I don't think he takes a backseat to anybody.
Yeah, this is one of those situations where, you know, and we sometimes go about things a little bit differently. I know I'm a little bit more, you know, stat oriented in terms of some of the writing that I do. And you're one of the best columnists in the country. But like I look at a lot of those things with, you know, where does this fit in terms of the efficiency or in terms of overall impact stats, different things like that, the different plus minuses, all that kind of stuff. For this exercise, though, it was really a lot like, just first blush reaction. If the question is, can this player be the best player on a championship team? It's a yes or a no. It's a do mm-hmm. you, can you believe it or can you not? Kevin Durant, the answer to that is still unquestionably yes for me. We know that he struggled at times. It's the last couple of postseasons where he's gotten to matched up against the Celtics and then last postseason against Denver with Aaron Gordon, the physicality of, you know, like-sized players that are just as strong, just as, maybe not, I mean, nobody's just as long, but like where you've got the defenders that are sort of aggressive and in him, he can't necessarily slough off that physicality the same way that he used to be able to. And so there is a point of contention there. Like in the context of an individual postseason series, Devin Booker might be the number one in Phoenix more, you know, it might fit better or the matchup might work out better for him to be the sort of the lead dog there than Kevin Durant. But if the question is just, would you believe me if I told you that this season Kevin Durant was the best player on a championship team? Unquestionably, the answer is yes. To me, actually, and this is where I think I differed a little bit from the consensus view on the staff. I had a longer list for tier one because the answer to me for that question was yes for more guys. I know that we sort of covered that in the level two conversation, but you know, if we go through that you know that list, and it's, for me, it's a yes on LeBron, it's a yes on Kawhi. Like, there's more names that are a yes for me, but I think the ones that were unquestionable all over the board that we haven't talked about yet, we should probably talk about that were the answer was yes for the last three championship teams.
Yes.
We just saw Jokic do it. We before that saw Steph do it. And we saw Giannis before that. To me, that was like you wrote those down in Sharpie. That was the first time that you opened up your doc. They went down there right away. And I'm guessing it was the same situation for you.
Yeah, it was. I differ from you a little bit. I have fewer names on mm-hmm. my level one, because it comes down to the same sort of calculus is if I say your name and I don't know anything else, can you be the best player on a championship team? I don't know anything else about the roster, who you're playing with, who you're playing against, within reason. The answer for most of these guys, the answer for Kevin Durant was yes. The answer for Jason Tatum was yes. The answer for Jokic and Steph and Giannis was yes. The answer for Luka was, I need to hear a little bit more. Like, who else
sure.
we got here?
Right.
But for KD, I think his game is still efficient enough and bankable enough that I don't need to hear as much as I would need to hear from a Joel Embiid, that I would need to hear from a LeBron James, that I would need to hear for an Anthony Davis or a Ja Morant or anybody else. For me, and this is where things become really interesting, I'm not going to go to Giannis. I'm going to go to Steph. And here's why. I saw Steph exhaust himself in that second round against the Lakers last year. And I looked at Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Jordan Poole, and I said, those guys aren't playing up to a championship level at this point. Jordan Poole's head was all messed up. We've all known that.
Sure.
Draymond Green did an admirable job when he was guarding Anthony Davis, but he couldn't guard him for 48 minutes. And Klay Thompson was just firing up everything, literally to Steve Kerr's chagrin, right? But Steph, I felt like even his bad games, he had a championship level impact. Even the games where the shots weren't going down, he's learned how to play the position a lot better than compared to when he was younger and much more of an athletic marvel. Now you're taking the ball out of his hands, and I'm not sure if that's a good thing. As much as Chris Paul is a maestro, I'm not sure if the mastery of Stephen Curry doesn't get drowned out by Chris Paul's, you know, veteran savvy.
Mm.
But I still think that Stephen Curry, as a standalone player, he's mature enough. He's smart enough. He knows how to manipulate a game in a way that I don't think he's known how to manipulate a game before. So I'm very curious if his team will be good enough to help elevate them. Because in the Western Conference, I look at the defending champion Denver Nuggets, the Phoenix Suns, and then there's a gap for everybody
right.
else.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. But it's interesting. I think about the Steph, Chris Paul, that a little bit differently. I think there are probably very few players in the league where Chris Paul would say, like, all right, I'm going to run things your way. And I kind of think that Stephen Curry, like, that's the indication of where Steph is in that, like, upper, you know, the upper firmament of superstars, is that even one of firmament, the stars up in the sky, like, get
up. At first, I thought you said vermin. I was like, wait a minute. Now, there's some opponents that might call Chris Paul that. But
yeah,
I don't.
Definitely. You want to get Julius Hodge up in here? We'll start talking about how we've used CP3.
DeMarcus Cousins.
Yes, right. No. The firmament, the stars in the top, the upper part of the sky. You know, the top floor. Let's call it that, right?
That level, is a triple word score on Words with Friends.
There we go. That's right. Oh, if only I had any friends. But we got where Steph is that kind of, he puts everything else in order. Everything else organizes around him. And then, like, through him, the entire, like, it's that argument of, is Stephen Curry a system superstar? No, Stephen Curry is the system.
He
and then
the system.
System is the superstar, right? And so I think the idea that, it's, I mean, the biggest question in Golden State is going to be, I mean, A, is, you know, Draymond Green, the issue that he has at the beginning of the season, the ankle injury that he's got, is that going to linger because their defense is wholly dependent on him? And then the second one is, can Chris Paul be the, like, raise the level when Steph's off the floor? Because when Steph's on the floor, invariably, you are an elite team. And that's, I think that's the question where, or the broader context of these sort of bus driver level players, these number one level players, when you're on the floor, is your team elite? Inarguably, yes, for Jokic. Inarguably, yes, for Giannis. Inarguably, yes, for Steph. And then Tatum is the really interesting one because, again, going back to that section of, like, impact level stats, whenever you do the advanced math on all these guys, Tatum always is, like, maybe
he
even a little higher
high.
Than super duper high. And some of that is almost never takes off, plays a ton of minutes. So he's on the floor, like, at a very basic level. If you are on the floor and you're awesome, you're elevating your team more than some guys, like in the example of a Kevin Durant, who is on a per minute basis or a per possession basis, just that good, but plays half the possessions that a guy like Tatum does. You mentioned the sort of the two-way effect that KD can have. Tatum, at this point, going into his age 25 season, he's at that level. You know, maybe he's never going to get the all-defense kind of love that some of the other perimeter stoppers are, but you can feel comfortable throwing him on just about anybody. I think he was at, like, 38.5 or 38.5 last season on really good shooting efficiency. This is the mark of a guy that can be the number one player on a title team. We've seen him consistently in the conference finals. We've seen him in the finals. We've seen him author, you know, all-time playoff performances to lift Boston. He did it in Milwaukee. He did it against Philly with the back against the wall. So it's like, you know, there was that moment in the bubble where Eric Spoelstra said of that exhausted Jimmy Butler. Jimmy, you know, is, like, slumped over the scorer's table. That's the image of a champion before he's a champion. Tatum is that kind of guy at this point. Like, all the only thing we haven't seen is the biggest thing there is to see. But all the other indicators point to him being that dude on that level for a team that I think everybody expects to be in the conversation late in the postseason again this year.
Jason Tatum has reached, like, he hasn't reached, he has firmly been in scary status.
Right.
He's not yet inevitable. Like, inevitable is like Michael Jordan in 1991. Inevitable is Shaquille O'Neal in 2001. Like, it's those guys, as soon as you see them, you're like, oh, we're not beating them at all. No matter what you do, we're not beating them. He hasn't reached that, but he is a sneaky MVP pick for me this year. Very sneaky. I'm not sure if I'm going to pick him as MVP, but he's very much in that conversation. A guy I should have maybe picked for MVP last year, despite his team being knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, Giannis Antetokounmpo. That is a guy that I think, because of the usage that he had last year, like, he was at a usage level that was pretty much unsustainable. And I think maybe it contributed to to his own injuries toward the end of the season because of, you know, Chris Middleton being out for a majority of the year and Jrue Holiday being overtaxed. Giannis had to take on a lot of that. He does not have to do that as much this year because of Damian Lillard, or at least one would think. But if he returns to being that super inevitable force on defense, in addition to the game being made easier for him by Damian Lillard, buddy, we've got all types of problems that go beyond whether they can beat the Boston Celtics and Jrue Holiday's revenge and everything else. We're looking at something completely different. Like, the paradigm has shifted, but the paradigm shift ends in the Rocky Mountains. It ends with Nikola Jokic, who answered all types of questions, questions that should never have actually been asked of him. And now he's coming back for more. And there's no reason to say Jokic can't put Anthony Davis in a body bag again. Well, he can't put anybody else in a clown suit again. He put the entire league in a clown suit during last year's playoffs. That was one of the most dominant runs we've ever seen. Shaquille O'Neal in 2000, Hakeem Olajuwon in 95, pick a year for Kareem. That's where this guy was, and I think he has an appetite for more. Even if he acts like he doesn't care, I think he definitely cares. You don't play that well, and you're laissez-faire about everything. I think it's past time we take Nikola Jokic seriously. I think we all do. Nobody's stupid here. But I would not be surprised if he tried to take his game to another level, because now he sees, oh, I like the taste of blood. I like the taste of everybody's blood. Give me more.
There's a great story about Boris Diaw from a long time ago. And it was like he walks in when the team was doing the pre-draft exercises and like everybody's got to go, vertical jump test. Like, how can you max out the vert max? And he walks in just like with a cup of coffee and his flip flops on, takes off his flip flops, goes up, maxes it out, and then goes, what is that supposed to be difficult? That is how Nikola Jokic does everything. Like, he's got a little cappuccino and being like, is this supposed to be tough? 30 points, 13.5 rebounds, 9.5 assists on 55% shooting in the postseason, and it looked easy. And this is, I think, the thing that we have to remember is that there's a reason why, at this point, it's like the GM survey just came out. There is the sense that this is a consensus opinion now. 27 years old, in the prime of his career, with an MVP, a finals MVP, a title, this is what he is. There's no reason to suggest that what he did this past postseason was like an outlier performance. It's who he's been in the regular season. It's who he's been up against the toughest competition in the playoffs. Sometimes he just hasn't had the squad with him, but he has it now. And he's also maybe reached the kind of level where if something else goes wrong, if Jamal Murray's not able to be up to snuff, if, Michael Porter Jr. doesn't have his jumper going, if Aaron Gordon is, able to be taken out of a series, whatever, you just believe he's going to raise that level. He's like, he is both the Shaq level. I don't know how you stop that guy once he's got the ball inside the elbow. And he's like the J Kidd or whoever, insert your point guard there, that's going to be able to get everybody else's level up. When you have both of those things on the same package, it's almost impossible to know what to do defensively against him. I don't know that anybody else has any great answers yet. And that's why I think he goes into this season and in this exercise at the very top of everybody's list.
Here's what I will say about Jokic as we wrap this up, and I think this is the best way to put it. There's more room for variance with him around the supporting pieces. Not to say that things have to be perfect for Steph or Giannis or Tatum or Luka Doncic or Kevin Durant, but like you said, things can go wrong and you feel like Jokic will cover that slack. Jamal Murray doesn't have to have a 27-6-5 playoff run. Again, a historic playoff run that he had, but you can foresee Jamal Murray coming back down and still feeling like the Nuggets can win the championship. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's more room for other players to not be their best selves, but yet for Jokic to still be his best self and for the Nuggets to not suffer that much lag. Like, if there were a level zero, like a bus driver's bus driver, that would be Nikola Jokic. But that is Dan Devine, and this is a wrap on our NBA Levels project here at Yahoo Sports. We've had so much fun doing these videos and these podcasts and having these wide-ranging discussions. We've hoped you've all enjoyed it. If you haven't looked at all four levels, go to the Yahoo Sports website and the app to check out how we all voted as a Yahoo Sports staff. Thanks, Dan. Really appreciate it. Make sure you come back to the Ball Don't Lie podcast tomorrow for the first episode of his new show, Divine Intervention. That's all we've got for you today on The Good Word. Thanks again to Bomani Jones for giving up some of his time. Once again, when this episode is over, make sure you go over to The Right Time with Bomani Jones on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. For producer John, who does all this work behind the glass, Evan and Ron, I'm Vincent Goodwill. Thank you once again so much for joining us here on The Good Word. Don't forget, we will be on 2 days a week, so Mondays and Wednesdays.
on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. Until then, everybody be safe.